Good evening, one and all. Yes, another week, another Tuesday, and another book and a chat with me, Barry, here on New Visions Radio. Well, we nearly didn't make it. Slight bit of an issue with phone numbers and stuff like that, and I just got it sorted about 5 seconds. Well, not to spare, we went a bit over, but you know what I mean. We're here, which is the important thing. Well, what can I say? Bit of summer, bit of weather, nice weather, though more rain, of course, in Connecticut, as always coming up, but it's always the same here. One of the things we have when these shows come along is, if you've got a first book, and the first book, a bit of success, it starts the ball rolling, how do you manage the second book? Especially if it's a series, a lot of people, they sort of do perhaps two or three together, so it's there in the background. But how do you pick up your momentum or keep your momentum going from the first book? Well, my guest today, he can perhaps help us with that, because he is award-winning in lots of different areas, I tell you, not just his latest type of novels, but other stuff as well. But I better introduce him, and I'm sorting myself out here, because on my show today, I have the one and only Paul Marks. Hi, Paul, how you doing?
Hi, good, Barry, how are you?
I'm not bad. I can't say I'm good, because I've got to have back surgery, but at least I now know what it is and can get it fixed, which is the important part. So, you know, I'm hopefully on the way to recovery once I get the surgery done. So that's the important thing. But it's good to have you on the show. Are you one of these people who's always been, into writing little stories? As soon as you could hold a crayon, you were jotting down little stories and stuff.
I don't know if I was writing them, but when I was a little boy, I used to play with my army men, and instead of, having them be like having a real war, I would pretend that they were making a movie. So I'd move them around. I did the whole thing. I had Tinker Toys that I'd set up like Klieg lights, and, so I guess it's always been in me, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's interesting about doing the movie part, because I guess you were known as a script doctor for movies. In fact, you were, as I understand it, last person basically to make a film on the old MGM backlot.
Well, that is according to Steven Bingen, who's one of the authors of the book MGM Hollywood's Greatest Backlot. And he determined that I was the last person to shoot there. So it's a distinction, but a dubious one, but it's cool to be able to say that.
Now, I've read bits about you and stuff like that, and I see that apart from, obviously award-winning this, that, and the other, shortlisted for the Seamus Award and Best Short Story, the 2006 Ellery Queen Readers Poll, I seem to have remember seeing that Ghosts of Bunker Hill around. Perhaps I read about it or something like that. But that was a pretty big success to get sort of voted in that award for a number one.
Well, I've been writing a series of stories for Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, the Ghost of Bunker Hill series. And, luckily, I guess, all of the ones that have been published have been voted into their top 10 by the readers of the magazine. And the first story, Ghost of Bunker Hill, was voted in the number one spot. So I got to go to New York and meet the people at Ellery Queen. And
all right.
Go to the Edgar Awards with them. It was very exciting, and very exciting to be, have people recognize the story, have the readers of the magazine recognize the story. It came as a total shock, but a wonderful shock.
I think that's great when, it must mean a lot more when the actual readers vote you than perhaps your peers, to me. I mean, because, it's, how can I put it? It's, if your peers write it, it could be, he's a good bloke sort of thing and stuff like that. But if the readers who read the thing and, obviously remember how good it was, they vote you to the award, and, to these award type things, it must mean a real lot to you.
It really does. It means a lot to have the readers recognize the story, but it also means a lot. My novel, White Heat, won the Seamus Award, and,
right.
That voted on by a judge panel, and that also means a lot. It's just nice to be recognized. You know, we toil, writers toil alone. You know, I like to say I'm in my cave working, you know, and we're alone. It's kind of a lonely job. We get together sometimes at conventions and things like that, but, you know, for the most part, we work alone. So it's nice to be recognized and to be appreciated for all the time and work and sweat and tears and everything that you pour into it.
Indeed, and one of the things that I know you're part of, which must help with that sort of sharing of this sort of thing, is being members of like mystery chapters and the various chapters there are for adventure mystery and all sorts of these different books, to work with people not just who are going through the authors, but the sort of genre that you're working in.
Well, yeah, I belong to the Mystery Writers of America. I belong to a group called Sisters in Crime, and despite the title, there are we call misters in it.
Yep, we've had those on the show before. Fooled me the first time, I tell you.
and also International Thriller Writers. And currently, I'm on the Los Angeles chapter board of Mystery Writers of America. But what's funny, what I talk to my wife about sometimes is that when I first joined Mystery Writers of America, we were like on the outside looking in. We didn't know anybody. And now we're on the inside. And, you know, it took a lot of work to get there and to be recognized. And it's a good feeling. But, you know, the groups are good places for people to go who are starting out or even, you know, successful, because they do offer comradeship and also advice on how to do things and networking.
I mean, we do have a lot of people. I know when Steve Berry comes on his yearly visit to us, you know, he's always saying about the sort of groups that he's part of and that sort of thing. And it's great to have these people, and like yourself, with the experience, especially for new people this day and age, new to the writing art or new to the mystery art. And one thing I know, I get you might have seen this, but on the show, is the increase in women protagonists in mystery type books.
I think definitely there's an increase in all kinds of quote unquote minority or women protagonists and also authors. So, you know, that's a good thing.
Oh, it is. It's definitely good. You obviously, as I was saying, you know, at the start of the show, one of the things that, your first book, White Heat, was a success. You know, Seamus Award winner, mystery thriller, White Heat. You know, they called it, was it Publishers Weekly, called it a taut crime yarn. Was that something you'd planned for a while? You had the idea churned out for a while? Or did it sort of just, you know, you were thought about sort of writing a fictional mystery book and it came there? And when you did think about it, were you planning to make it into a series?
I think when I first started it, I wasn't planning to make it into a series, but then it seemed to, work on that level, because the two main characters, the private investigator Duke and his partner Jack, they work well together. People seem to like them and people wanted more. So I decided to do a sequel to it, and in fact, I'm working on a third book in the series right now. But I don't think originally that I had planned to make it a series. And as for how it came about, well, you know, I live in L.A., and I lived in L.A. at the time of the Rodney King riots.
Mm-hmm.
And so the riots, you know, were a big thing for everybody that lived here. And I think that's started the idea percolating for what became White Heat, because it takes place during those riots.
Right. So you've got the first one, success, and then the next one comes along. Were a lot of people after the first one clamoring for what's now Broken Windows?
Well, I think at the time, it's a long and sad story, to be honest with you. After White Heat came out, I got a good New York agent, and, you know, know, she had a lot of successful clients, people on the New York Times bestseller list and things like that, and she got sick.
Oh.
And so she never actually sent out Broken Windows, the sequel, but it was tied up for several years before I could extricate myself from that contract.
I understand.
So it actually, even though it was done, and very frustrating for me to, you know, sit there and see nothing happening with it, it took about 5 years from White Heat to Broken Windows. So, yes, there were people who wanted to see the sequel after White Heat, but I think, unfortunately, I lost some of that momentum because it took so long to get it out because of the legal issue.
Right. And that's interesting because people, we get a lot of obviously listeners on the show and stuff like that, that people don't realize that this sort of thing can happen. You're tied into a contract. Somebody's sick or the publishers fold up, you know, this sort of thing. You're left stuck because that book is under contract and it takes a while, as you said, for all this legal stuff to get sorted out.
Well, and that happened actually with the first novel that I had accepted by a publisher, but it still hasn't been published to this day. What happened is I did a satirical novel on a screenwriter trying to make it in Hollywood, and it had a murder twist too. And it got picked up by a major publisher, and I was really excited. Everything was really cool. You know, this was going to be my big break.
Yep.
And what happened is that the major publisher that picked it up got bought or something by another publisher, and the whole editorial staff was, you know, swept away, and as a new broom sweeps clean, my novel was swept away with it. And because, this is a lesson I've learned, because the humor was very topical and related to issues in the news of the day, I couldn't resell it after all of that because it was too delayed for the topical issues to be funny anymore. So one piece of advice is don't write anything with topical humor.
It's not just that, because I know in my own YA stuff, there was, at the time, people were just having iPhones, you know, when that came out. And it was, you know, my goodness, you know, this kid's going to get an iPhone. Well, of course, this day and age, an iPhone's nothing. You know, you've got to watch what you put. I mean, yes, you can sort of cover the sort of music tide and that, you know, oh, he's playing an old song from, you know, that his parents used to play or something like that. But, you know, to actually sort of say, you know, something that 10 years ago was brilliant if you got given one of these, you know, the first Xbox or something like that. That's nothing these days. You know, it really is. And it's hard to know what to put in some of those. You know, you have to be a bit vague, I'd have thought.
Well, you know, the fact is that White Heat and Broken Windows are set in the 1990s.
Ah, so you've got that, okay.
I have another book that's coming out in 2020 that's set in the 1940s during World War II on the home front. And it's easier to know what to do in the 1940s set book than the 1990s book, because we lived through the 90s and things were the same but different, like you were saying.
Yep.
People had iPhones, but in the early 90s, they were as big as a walkie-talkie.
Exactly, yes.
What version of Windows were you using, or were you still using an amber screen or a green screen monitor?
Yeah.
You know, so that all that stuff is actually harder because we have it in our heads. You know, we remember. And so it's actually harder for me to get the things right sometimes on the 1990s set books than the 1940 book.
No, I can totally understand that. I mean, because you're looking yourself for the information from the 1940s. It's not your own experience, or if it is, it's a sort of limited experience. You know, you're actually...
No experience in 1940.
Right. Neither have I, not quite. But so I mean, you're doing it from other people's memories, documentation, newsreels, or what have you. So it's the same as everybody else is doing these days. Nobody can remember, you know, not many people left that can remember that stuff. So everybody's sort of vision, if you like, is much the same.
Well, I did research. I did book and internet research, and I watched old movies, which I like. That's not exactly torture for me. And listening to the music of that era is also not torture for me. I love the swing music of that era.
Right.
And the story revolves around the swing scene. But the best resource that I had to go to, the story is set on the Los Angeles home front during the war. And the best resource I had to go to was my mom and her friends, because they were there. And I could ask them and get personal recollections of what the city was like. The other thing that really helped a lot was maps. I got a lot of maps of the city as it was then, because one of the things that they do in the story, it's called The Blues Don't Care, by the way, and it's coming out in 2020. But one of the things that they do is they go from L.A. to Long Beach. Well, there were no freeways back then, so how did you get from L.A. to Long Beach in 1943? Mm-hmm. So maps really helped in that regard.
I mean, that's the other sort of thing. You know, distances and travel and everything these days, it's a matter of a fact. But you go back to, as you say, the 40s, and it was a hard job to do these travels. It wasn't just let's get in the car, go down the interstate, you know, and that's it. It was, you've got to load up, going to have to stop on the way, going to have to. You didn't have that facility unless you went, say, by train or an early plane. But even then, there was issues with half the travel, especially during wartime.
Well, and I don't think a lot of people were traveling by plane at that time. People did take trains.
Right.
But in terms of getting to Long Beach, I guess there were the red cars, but my people drive automobiles, and it's all surface streets. It's just, you know, it's all surface streets, no freeways.
Right, yeah. I mean, again, you know, it's like, what's it? I was talking to I got a couple of elder teenagers, and we were talking about dial-up phones. I mean, my daughter's got a record player, so she does know about records and stuff like that. But I was trying to explain about a dial-up phone. You want to see something funny? You give a teenager a dial-up phone and see if they can get it working. They have no idea. They're shouting at it. They've got no idea.
You know what's funny is I, of course, grew up with dial-up phones, but I don't know if I'd remember how to do it at this point.
Oh, crikey. I mean, that's another thing, you know. You go back to 10 years or something like that, you had phone boxes to make a call. Yeah, there's hardly a phone box around anymore.
Well, that's it. You know, things were the same, but just slightly different. It's like living in a slightly alternative universe.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, really dot your I's and cross your T's to get everything right. Because otherwise you're going to say something because it's the way it is today and it's what's in your head, and you're just going to put it down, but you got to go back and go over it and over it to make sure that all the little details are right. The one thing I will cheat on sometimes is if my story is set, let's say, in April of 1992 and a song came out in June, I might fudge that just a little, but I know somebody's going to, you know, email me and say, that song came out 3 months after your story.
Oh, you've got to allow a little bit of poetic license. So in White Heat, you've got, again, it's set in LA, but this is a sort of a little bit in this day and age, because it's about some of the bits on the immigration side as well, isn't it?
Well, Broken Windows deals with immigration issues, and that's set in 1994 in Los Angeles, and deals, well, it's a murder mystery thriller, but it revolves around Proposition 187, which was an anti-illegal alien proposition in California at the time.
Okay.
And White Heat is set in 1992 during the Rodney King riots, and that deals more with racism. So both those issues, of course, are very much in the news these days. And what I like to say is that even though these stories are set in the 1990s and they're mystery thrillers, excitement, roller coaster rides, they give us a chance to kind of see a prism of what's happening today by looking at the recent past.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, it's 1990s, and yet it's 2019. It hasn't changed, has it, either of them, really, when you think about it?
Exactly, and that's one of the things that I like about these stories is that, you know, like I say, they give us a prism to look at what's happening today, but kind of with a perspective of distance from the past. And, you know, the main thing I want to do is entertain people with a good, thrilling story, and I think I've done that. But, again, they're set in the real world. They're not, you know, totally fictional in terms of what they deal with and the milieu, the world that the characters inhabit.
Okay. So what sort of response have you had to the new one? You know, is it people say, oh, finally, you know, it's here, or as you say, you lost a bit of momentum. But, you know, have you had a good feedback so far?
Oh, definitely. It's gotten really good reviews. I mean, the reviews have been unbelievably positive and terrific. And, you know, the sales have been good. But I do think, you know, that I lost some momentum because of the distance between the two. But I'm hopefully making up for lost time.
Yeah, well, you might.
And the reaction, the people that have read it, you know, the reaction that I'm getting and the reviews that I've seen, whether Amazon reviews or professional reviewers, you know, seem to be very, very positive.
And, of course, you might get people reading the second one and going back and reading the first one, you know, new people to being introduced to you.
Well, that's, you know, one thing that I would hope would happen. And you don't have to have read White Heat in order to get into Broken Windows, because there's enough backstory there that people can get caught up.
Okay, good.
But if they want to read White Heat, the ebook version is on sale for 99¢ right now across platforms. So it would be a good time to get that. And then if they like that, they can move on to Broken Windows.
Well, one other award-winning of yours is Coast to Coast. Something different? Is that, or where did that come from? Another award-winning book, I might as well. Yes.
We've done two Coast to Coast mystery anthologies, and what they are collections of mystery stories. The first one was Coast to Coast, Murder from Sea to Shining Sea. So we had several authors do mystery stories set in different locations across the country. The second one was Coast to Coast, Private Eye. Mm-hmm. And the Private Eye volume did amazingly well with 14 award nominations.
Wow.
Two of the stories, including my story in there, were selected for the Best American Mysteries of 2018 by Louise Penny and Otto Penzler. And my story also won a McCavity Award, which is another prestigious award. So that one, like I say, got 14 award nominations. It got a nomination for Best Anthology at the Anthony Awards, and, you know, really did well in terms of recognition, which was very gratifying.
That's great. What was the other one I read was one of the Ellery Queens, isn't it? Howling at the Moon?
Howling at the Moon was a story in Ellery Queen that Ellery Queen published, and that was my first story for Ellery Queen, and that also got voted into the top 10 of the readers' poll for that year. I don't remember what the number was, but, it, you know, that was my first story for them that's not related to the Ghosts of Bunker Hill series, and it was also, you know, voted into the top 10, so I'm very grateful to the people who vote.
I think that's great. I mean, yeah, to sit here and go through your books and see the success, yeah, right from, say, number 7, I think it was, in 2014, you know, to this and the new books coming out and that. I think it only looks good for the future. As you said, you've got quite a few others underway. But what I'm going to do now, because time is beating us as it always does, we're a couple of seconds late, but I'm going to hand the show over to you, Paul, and let you tell everybody where they can find more about you and about your books.
The best place to go is my website, which is www.pauldmarks.com. So pauldmarks.com. And there's all kinds of information there. There's a bunch of different pages and Also, they can find me on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, but I really haven't mastered that yet, so I don't do it very much. But I'm on Facebook, and I also blog for a blog called Sleuthsayers once or twice a month, and another blog called Seven Criminal Minds twice a month. So I'm all over the place. And Amazon, they can find me on Amazon and other sites. Also the Down and Out book site, that's my publisher. And okay. Just all over the place.
And you've got a newsletter people can sign up for there, I think?
I do have a newsletter, and if they want to sign up for it, they can go to my website, and there's a place to do that on the homepage and other places as well. And if they want to, I'd love to have them on my newsletter.
Okay. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been really great chatting to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Barry, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Paul D. Marks, M-A-R-K-S, Paul and letter D. Marks. And as he said, you can find all about him and his great books, wonderful award-winning stories, thrillers, you know, lots of great write-ups, lots of great reviews at pauldmarks.com. Paul, letter D, Marks.com. All one word, pauldmarks.com. Great stuff. Looking for there, you like the thriller stuff and that, you'll find a lot there to like, I tell you. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back again tomorrow. But as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget...